Welcome to Biz Rocket Radio with Stone Payton and John Baker. John Baker is a certified financial planner with a Master's of Science in Personal Financial Planning. Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards, Inc. owns the certification mark CFP, Certified Financial Planner, TM and CFP, and in the U.S., which it awards to individuals who successfully complete the CFP Board's initial and ongoing certification requirements. John Baker offers financial planning and securities through Woodbury Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor and broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC, located at 1050 Crown Point Parkway, Suite 1675, Atlanta, Georgia, 30338. This program is for information purposes only and should not be considered a solicitation of or offer to buy or offer to sell securities or investment advisory services. Information in this program regarding market or other financial information is obtained from sources which are believed to be reliable. We do not warrant or guarantee the timeliness or accuracy of this information. When considering any registered security products, seek a prospectus carefully before you invest. Make sure you consult your financial professional regarding any specific situation. And now, get ready for Biz Rocket Radio. Here's Stone Payton and John Baker.
Welcome to Biz Rocket Radio. This is John Baker here on a nice sunny day here in Atlanta. Biz Rocket Radio is a show where we focus on speaking with executives here in the Atlanta area, as well as business owners, learning a little bit from their experiences, the challenges that they've had in their careers, gaining insight as to things that they've done well and things that they've done not so well, and get a chance to learn from that from that experience. And today we've got John Corbett with us, and I know John from a couple of groups that I work with and have had a chance to get to know him in the last few months. I also learned something new today, that he's actually an ex-ham radio specialist. Now, for those of us who don't know what that is, maybe we can get some insight. John, how you been?
I've been just great. I appreciate you inviting me to be here today.
Yeah, it's great to have you. So tell us about this ham radio experience. Is that on your resume?
Actually, probably like a lot of people, I have versions of my resume A through Z. So it's probably on one of them, but not something I typically use. I think it is on the LinkedIn profile. So as a kid, probably 12 or 13 years old, I had an interest in technology and started learning about amateur radio and practiced, studied, took the test, passed the code test and the theory, and was using Morse code to be able to communicate with people around the world. And one of the things that amateur radio operators did, still do, is they exchange QSL cards. So if you're 12 or 13 years old, there's not much mail that comes to you, you know, at
right,
a house.
Right.
But I was getting these QSL cards, which, you know, confirmed a communication with people all over the world, and including at that point in time, I remember Cuba.
So, Cuba?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I'm still licensed. I've had my current license now and the same call sign for, I guess it's over 40 years.
Wow. Wow, so you had to learn Morse code and the whole nine yards, eh?
Yeah, it was really interesting because one of my first jobs out of college, I was working at undergraduate degree is EE, and first job was working at Motorola, and they had a huge amateur radio club, and I was the vice president of the ham club and and did all these kinds of social activities, and my wife used to come, and she would work the log book,
yeah,
and, you know, write down all these communications. And another fun thing that they used to do, again, still do, they call it a hare and a hound, or a hidden transmitter hunt. And somebody would go out with a small transmitter, and you had to find them. and part of this was part of the background for radio operators, how even today, in situations like in Japan with the earthquake and the tsunami, where they help civil defense and establishing, you know, communications as volunteers in areas like that. So the hidden transmitter was really a situation of kind of things that people do when being able to find somebody who, like a skier, is trapped in an avalanche. And so it hones your skills in being able to do some other real life things. Thank heavens we were just having fun, then go out for pizza and beer afterwards.
That's right. That's right. It was a social gathering, and hopefully you don't Well, you could always use the skill, but hopefully we don't necessarily need it anytime soon.
Yep.
Well, tell us a little bit about Corbett & Associates. I know you're president there. Tell us a little bit about the company and a little on your background.
Sure. Well, what I mentioned earlier was that undergraduate degree is a BSEE, and I worked as a design engineer for about 8 years and then made a career change into sales and marketing and joined a company that you might have heard of, Advanced Micro Devices, AMD, and spent the rest of my life now doing sales and marketing things and, you know, never looked back at engineering. Several years ago, I was the vice president of worldwide sales and marketing at a company called GalvanTech. Really interesting pre-IPO startup. I was brought on board to help them complete an IPO at a time when almost everybody was completing an IPO. So very, very successful, and successful to the point that we were acquired by another billion-dollar semiconductor company. Mm. So the good news, bad news is, had we done an IPO, which I was planning on, I'd probably been able to retire then.
Right.
I wasn't quite able to retire, but it was successful for the company, for myself financially. And I took some time off and decided that, you know, I would really like to do some of the things that I'd been doing, but for a wide variety of clients, if you will. So providing sales and marketing expertise to smaller companies. And, you know, typically that's what we've been doing, focusing on companies in the $200 to $250 million range, most of them technology-centric.
So what would a company come to you for? Is it Salesforce training or is it marketing training? What specifically might they come to you for?
A wide variety of things, John, but it's a good question. And a lot of the things that that we get contacted about now are help in more formal forecasting. So they say, well, you know what? We've got a quota that the CEO is assigned, and we really need to find out how it is that we can define that quota so that we can measure the performance to plan on a weekly or a monthly basis. And also, in addition to the quotas, another thing that's very important, and it's setting compensation plans.
Now, is that for salespeople or is that for anybody?
Actually, again, as having P&L responsibility and being responsible for sales and marketing, I can speak to the fact that it has incorporated compensation metrics and measurements for both sales and marketing people.
And what's been a good way to do that? I mean, if you get organizations out there or executives that are trying to get their arms around how do you effectively compensate? What's a good way to go about doing that?
I was actually at a meeting yesterday when somebody mentioned to me, they said, I need to follow up with you because we've only had one person in the last several years meet the quota. He says, what do you think about that? I said, well, you know, again, I don't know all the specifics. I said, but typically a rule of thumb is you probably should have 75% of the people who are attaining quota at some level. If they're not, I said, then that really suggests that your incentive is really a disincentive because people will figure out very quickly they're not going to make it. And if they're not going to make it, then they're not going to be as committed, you know, and dedicated to that. So it's got to be fair and it's got to be reasonable. And there are many different ways to be able to set the thresholds, publish a tech tip newsletter monthly. And one of them recently was about that. In the old days, a lot of people did it from dollar zero, just a flat straight line.
Right.
Nowadays, people are being a little bit more creative. And typically it says, well, I'm paying salespeople to sell to begin with.
Yeah.
And therefore, many companies now are setting some threshold.
Yeah.
And they say, okay, so there's a threshold here. And until we get above 40 or 50% sales, there isn't any incremental incentive on top of that.
Right.
So some of these things are straight lines. Mm-hmm. Some of these things actually can be two straight lines with different slopes, you know. And sometimes they're, quote, asymptotic.
Yeah.
A lot of companies these days say, you know what, I want a cap on the salespeople's earnings. And that isn't necessarily a fact that they're trying to constrain their incomes, but the CEO working with the CFO, when the CFO says, I need to know I need to be able to budget and allocate, you know, a pool of money, if you will. And I really don't want to have to get blindsided by the fact that somebody has a very lucky period and it really, you know, distorts or may not have the money set aside for that. So, again, there are many different compensation schemes depending on the company, but thresholds and caps are becoming more prevalent.
You know, one of the things that I've found in working with executives is sometimes they don't know that there's a problem. And compensation certainly is one of those areas that you may not know that there's really an issue going on with your employees, and they might not say anything. How might an executive or a small business owner even know that, like, these are some signs that I need to be looking out for, that compensation, some form of compensation may need to change?
It's one of the things that allows people like me sometimes to be very effective, and that's having an outsider, you know, come in. They don't have any bias. When I go in, one of the things that I use, as a matter of fact, a tool is part of the methodology, and it's called a gap analysis.
Okay.
And if you were familiar with Excel, and if you've ever seen something that's called a radar plot, you can kind of visualize what that is. So we've got this 100 questions that we ask. And those 100 questions, they say, you know, what is it that you want as the goals for the sales and marketing team?
Mm-hmm.
Then they go through the 100 questions, and the 100 questions allow them to say, how are they performing now? The difference between what their goals are and how they're performing now is what comes out to us as a gap analysis.
Right.
Frequently, what we find out is that the compensation doesn't reinforce the corporate goals.
Hmm.
And it's not a mistake of the executive team, it's sometimes it's just very difficult to articulate and make sure that the compensation scheme does reinforce the corporate goals for everybody.
We've talked a lot about compensation. What other kinds of things make a difference in either motivating or encouraging sales and marketing people to perform at a high level?
Let's assume that they're going to perform at a high level if they're encouraged. I always try to take the high road, and you know, the fact that people want to do a good job.
Now, is that not necessarily the case that you found?
I think when it doesn't happen, it's not intentional. And so, again, for me, in sitting down and visiting with the senior management team, let's just say it could be the president, the CEO, the vice president of sales and marketing, frequently that you'll find out is that there's some finger pointing maybe between sales and marketing about who's got the responsibility. And another thing that frequently happens, and this is true, marketing doesn't feel that they're compensated as well as salespeople. Part of the reason for that is that it's difficult, not impossible. I've put metrics in place, but it's more difficult to measure quantitatively some of the things that the marketing people deliver.
Yeah.
On the sales side,
it's a number, man. It's straight up, right?
It's a weekly, it's a monthly. You just can't get, you know, you can't get out from under it. Another one of the things that sometimes that the marketing people don't seem to understand or appreciate is that salespeople have a good bit of their total income being, quote, discretionary. And so, if you ask the marketing people, well, do you want to take 40 or 50% of your income and have it maybe happen or maybe not happen?
Yeah.
Well, wait a second.
I didn't go that far. What do you mean? I have to cut my income to get the potential to go higher?
Yeah. So what happens is that, you know, frequently, you know, there's things that these different parties aren't really talking about. And if you get somebody, you know, like myself that comes in and says, well, you know what, the goals or the metrics or the responsibility is not being clearly defined here, which is why you have some finger pointing. It really needs to be clear who's responsible and who has ownership. Another one of the things that you may have found in your life is that there's no sense giving somebody the responsibility if they don't have the authority to control it. And that's another one of the things that we find is frequently, you know, missing. Mm. Somebody's responsible for some metric that they really don't have the authority to control.
Right.
And that just shows that there's a lack of balance there. If they can't control their destiny, they shouldn't be measured on that in that fashion.
Right. Right. What do you do when you have situations that executives are bringing you in or talking to you about getting advice on either sales or marketing people that are maybe having their income artificially increased because they're hitting numbers and they're doing well, and then all of a sudden that goes away and they're brought back down to where they're saying, well, wait a minute, this baseline comp barely even gets me to pay the bills. I got used to spending up here. Hey, I need a raise, or I need to change comp altogether because now the numbers aren't really in my favor, and they get disgruntled and, all of a sudden create issues. Do you find that happening much?
Certainly it does happen. I think that people who have been in sales for a long period of time and who are used to the ups and downs budget for that, as an example, for myself, mostly our budget, my wife and I for 41 years, is pretty much planning on whatever the base salary is or some portion of additional compensation, but we're not expecting and relying on that happen because it certainly doesn't, year in and year out.
Right.
So I think one of the things is a maturity aspect for the salespeople. They have to understand that sometimes there are things beyond their control. And I can tell you that in the 30 years that I've been doing this, I've had some years that have just evaporated.
Right.
Evaporated in front of my very eyes, and it wasn't because anything, I did. If you look back at the crash in the year 2000, Cisco happened to be one of my largest customers. And I kept on getting these forecasts, and I was telling the CEO, I said, I really think that Cisco was over-ordering. And he says, you think you're smarter than Cisco? They got all these people over there. I said, pretty soon every man, woman, and child is going to have one of these products.
Right.
For us to ship this many. And so he just figured I was just being kind of negative. Well, the market crashed, and Cisco and Alcatel and Lucent and Nortel, I'm thinking all the stocks that I watched go right down the toilet, they all got blindsided. And so it doesn't mean that a salesperson was doing, was being any much less effective. Sometimes things go on that, are beyond your control.
Yeah, there's external factors in them, pretty much any of those kinds of things that they're going to either go in your favor artificially, or sometimes artificially they go against you.
All of that is true, and some of the things that I talk about, as a matter of fact, that I've been brought in to help people put into place are, what are some of the long-term leading indicators, other than just relying on the customer saying, I think I'm going to need this many, I think I'm going to need this many. Well, there's a lot of different things that are leading, indicators. Some of them are more long-term. You can be looking at the GDP. But some of the things that are really kind of interesting, you start looking at transportation usage and utility, factory capacity. There are a lot of other indicators out there that may tell you, we may be at a real peak here, and the next inflection point is going to be negative.
Right.
Trees just don't grow to the sky.
Yeah. Yep. So if you're looking at payouts in terms of bonuses or compensation, does it matter whether they're paid annually or quarterly or monthly, or does it change versus the corporate structure or the type of industry that people are in?
My experience is it's probably more related to the industry. If you hear about the people on Wall Street, their bonuses are annual.
Right.
And so you may hear somebody's got a six-figure salary, which any of us would think is a good salary, but be difficult for them to live on. Gee whiz, I got to scrunch by on a $250,000 a year.
What is that?
Yeah. But, they get, annual payouts that are seven-figure numbers.
Yeah.
So I think that, as an example, that's one of the industries where it tends to be annual. And the industries that I'm experienced with in technology, I would say that it's monthly or quarterly, and part of that gets down to how much time and what kind of infrastructure you have to measure it.
Right.
But certainly, I think that quarterly is typically what I see with regard to a fair balance in the time it takes to measure it and the ability to pay it out. Most people can balance their financial responsibility, because once it happens, it's just like, it's going to take me one quarter to get in sync. But after that, I know it's every quarter after that. So, but whether it was monthly or quarterly, I think the things are that it needs to be fair, it needs to reinforce the corporate goals, and it needs to reward and encourage and really pull apart the super achievers.
Right.
Because otherwise, if everybody is getting rewarded, at the same level, I don't think it really allows you to focus on and be able to point to other people. John Baker here is a super achiever. That's why he's 150% of quota.
Right.
And he's out, driving a new BMW, and you're sitting there wondering, what you're going to do about making this month's car payment.
Right, right. So when push comes to shove, who's bringing you in the door? I mean, who are you usually working with or talking to that's bringing you in and saying, we need to bring John in here to kind of help us out?
It's usually somebody on the senior management team. It would sometimes be the vice president of sales or marketing, but usually and more often, it's probably the COO, president, or the CEO.
Right.
The vice president of sales or marketing, you may see this be somewhat threatening.
Right.
Obviously, yeah. They assume that they're doing a good job. They may or may not be doing a good job. What I usually find is that there's always room for improvement, and that's one of the things that we talk about. And the corporate presentation we have is improving performance. I'll give you an example. If you're a professional athlete and you're competing, the differences between winning and losing could be 1 second, 1 point, 1 inch, and they're both highly qualified individuals.
Right.
So the difference between being a winner and a loser can be very, very small. Another thing, when I was at Advanced Micro Devices, the founder, president, CEO, Jerry Sanders, tremendously gifted individual, great speaker. And one of the things that he used to say, frequently was, we're not expecting to go in and change things by 100%, but if we could find 100 different things that we could each improve by 1%,
right,
we could be very, very successful.
Yeah.
So frequently that's what I found is, I use the gap analysis, which is a process and a methodology that makes me allow myself to look at every company the same way every
mm-hmm.
time.
Mm-hmm.
And this is basically, learned knowledge that I've distilled and put down and said, I don't want to have to try to remember what to ask these people.
Yeah.
I want to try to take the knowledge of the things that I've done over these 30 plus years and be able to use it in a repeatable, fashion. So frequently we'll go in and we'll say, here are some things that either you have done or haven't done, or could it be improved? And maybe it's only 4 to 6% improvement. And the CEO says, I'm happy with that.
Yeah.
I'd really be happy to improve what we're doing by 6%. The other thing is that when I'm in front of them, one of the things that hopefully becomes very obvious to them, if it was easy, you've already done it.
Yeah.
We're not trying to suggest you're stupid and I'm smart. You've done all the heavy lifting. Frequently, it could be many small things where there are areas for that improving performance, and that's what we try to focus on. Or frequently, it's tasks that have just been undone. They didn't have a person with the time, skills, or experience, and they put something off. And he said, I really wish I had a person. But it's not a long-term project. It's not worth going out and hiring somebody. But they say, I really would like to get that done. And so therefore, going out and finding somebody, outsourcing, interim, or fractional, if you will, makes good sense.
Yeah, yeah. So what have you found from a gap analysis standpoint that is of... It comes up all the time. One of those things, besides compensation,
mm-hmm.
what are some of those hot buttons?
Particularly in smaller to mid-sized companies, they don't have as good of an appreciation of what best practices are. And so they're struggling to either utilize effectively or even implement a CRM tool.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, or they say, I would like to get regularly in front of more clients and spread the word, but I'll give you an example. They've heard of Constant Contact. They've heard of Exact Target. many other different ways to deliver, you know, by email. And he said, I haven't done it. We don't have anybody that's done it. I'm not even sure what's good, you know, or bad. Another one of the things that we do is help recommend software or services to companies that are looking to develop best practices in some of these core areas. So CRM, email. Another thing that's very, very big these days is business intelligence, or, you know, being able to turn data into a dashboard, a graphic. I'm very, very big on graphical information. In the old days, you used to show up with your boss and you'd give him 6 pages of, you know, Excel falling down to the floor. Nobody wants to see that. You know, the senior management team and the board of directors would much rather see something that's a graphical analysis.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a line that shows the goal, and there's bars that stand up, and you're either meeting or exceeding that goal. I got it. It's that quick.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another one of the things that we do try to do, is to help people to be able to get beyond the forest and see the trees, so that they develop the metrics that allow them, I want to call it, drive with headlights instead of reacting to taillights.
Yeah, yeah.
If the information you get financially is after the quarter is already closed, just
what's the point?
The point? So what we try to do is help them develop forward-looking metrics, graphical metrics like this, and it may show them, you know what, there's a gap here. It doesn't look like I'm going to make this quarter. And then there are ways to drill down and say, what was the assumption? What were you planning on doing? And why is that not happening? Hopefully, it allows them to have enough time where maybe they've got, you know, time to have a corrective action.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact is, if you're constantly waiting until after the month closes to find out how you did, you're a day late and a dollar short.
Yeah. So, and we've talked about this a little bit, but maybe you could sum up what you feel you offer that might be different than your competition. Because there's a lot of people out there doing the consulting kind of thing. And the sales and marketing and being a consultant to these smaller, a lot of the times I see the medium size, so maybe that's a niche in terms of your area. But what do you see that sets yourself aside or apart from competition?
I usually ask my clients, you know, once I've had a successful engagement, you know, what helped you make the decision? What got you over, you know, deciding on me versus, you know, somebody else? Two or three things seem to come out. There are some people that do sales consulting. There are some people that do marketing consulting. There aren't as many that do sales and marketing consulting. I try to have established my vertical as being fairly narrow and is technology-based. I'm sticking with what I know.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing that really winds up being important to an awful lot of these people, they said, I had a consultant come in, a big company, and they wanted $10,000 to write a white paper to tell me what the problem was.
Yeah.
I said, I know what the problem is. I need somebody to help me do it.
Yeah.
So probably the single biggest thing that I wind up finding that people are satisfied in and wind up using me is not only the ability strategically and analytically, but the hands-on skills to actually do it, train their people, and be able to provide that process and methodology so that when I leave, the thing continues to still work.
Yeah, action steps, actually implementing the whole thing, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. And how long do you typically work with a organization?
As long as I can continue adding value or they have a problem, typically we don't do things that are less than about a 3 days worth of work.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's many weeks. Sometimes one of the things we do, as a matter of fact, in our process flow, there's 4 steps. At the last step, after we've done the engagement, one of the things that I've found, and I'm sure you found this, you know, with your experience in going for the masters, you don't know what you don't know, you know, the day after you've been in some course.
Exactly.
It takes a day or two later or a week later before, you know, you're not there with the instructor anymore and went, it sounded clear to me when he was going over it or she was going over it, and now they're not here, I don't get it. So one of the things that we've done, it isn't necessarily a guarantee, but we follow back up 15 days, 30 days, and 45 days after we complete an assignment.
Right.
And it's like, did you get it?
Yeah.
Is it working the way we intended, you know, for it to work? So although not a warranty, I think that you know, my clients get a good sense of security from that. The other thing, it's a little bit self-serving, is at the end of the 45 days, it's like, if you'd like somebody to be able to be back here one day a month, we're happy to sign something for you to be able to do that for the remainder of the year.
Right.
And frequently they say, you know what, it's a security blanket. I'm sure there's some way I'll be able to find out, you know, to use your time for being here. So that's another one of the things that we try to do, is be able to develop long-term fractional assignments that continue keeping us engaged. And what we normally find is those people will find over a period of time something else that they'd like to have done, and we get referrals and or additional follow-on activity.
Mm-hmm. So if somebody hires your organization, who are they typically working with? I mean, who's coming out to do this work? Is it, are there associates that you have that come out and do it? Is it you primarily? Who are they working with typically?
You know, right now, as a matter of fact, and for the last several years, it has been primarily me. I've got other people that I work with. As a matter of fact, there's another organization. You see the name here, Sales and Marketing Advisors.
Right, right.
I've actually launched another similar company doing some of the same things, and it's got four partners.
Okay.
And part of the reason that I'm doing that is to eliminate that sense that some companies have. It's like, gee whiz, if we're talking to a person, it's just one person, might not have the bandwidth, they could get busy, and I don't want to be not able to have, you know, that professional service when I need it. So that was one of the things, and, you know, looking back at my own activity, you know, Einstein's quote of, being insane is doing the same thing and expecting a different result.
Right.
And so one of the things that I've come up with is that if I were able to bring on board additional executives with experience like mine, but complementary P&L experience, vice presidents, general managers in sales and marketing, that may help some companies more easily decide that, you know, we're more acceptable because there are, you know, our other players.
Yeah, yeah. So when you're out there, you know, beating the bushes and looking for new clients and kind of building the business that you're creating here, what motivates you to get up in the morning? What keeps you going?
I tell you what, you know, one of the things, there's two or three things that if I didn't start off in engineering, one was actually I started in law. And so I thought that law was very, very, you know, interesting. I've always enjoyed law. But the other thing is teaching. I enjoy teaching people. I enjoy writing. I've been writing and took journalism in high school and in college. And as I mentioned, I publish a newsletter now. I enjoy sharing those things with people. And it really, it excites me when I see that they get it.
Yeah.
You know, they brought me in and they said, we've got this problem and you'll think it's simple, but we're stuck. And when I get done, then I went, wow, you know, that really helped me. And sometimes it's a little bit depressing because it's kind of like the magician. As soon as the magician shows you how you do the trick, it's like, that's it?
That's it. Oh, I could do that.
Yeah. Well, of course you could have. Or it's kind of the joke about the plumber. You know, the lady gets the bill from the plumber, and it's like, you know, gee whiz, I saw what you did. You had this big wrench, and you got down there, and
you know, you turned a couple things, and he was done, right?
Yeah, I knew where to look. I got the big wrench.
Yeah, and I knew what to turn.
Exactly.
If you turn it the wrong way, you get a very different result.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, probably the bigger question that I get frequently is, you know, why people outsource. And so one of the examples that I use, I said, you know what? Have you ever called a plumber or called an electrician, or you ever take your car in to get an oil change? When I asked that, you know, within a group, almost everybody's hand goes up. I said, well, you actually have decided to outsource. You've decided somebody else had the skills, the tools, the experience to be able to do that more effectively,
right,
more cost effectively than you. So without thinking about it, you've outsourced. For executives, the other thing that I point out, your time is best spent in whatever your core function is.
Yeah.
And spending time outside of that core function really isn't as productive for you. So, you know, chasing clogs in a sink isn't good use of...
Not going to be very helpful for you.
Yeah, not helpful for me. Certainly an important thing. And when those people come up and they tell me, that's $180, John, it's like, I just grin and bear it and write the check.
Write the check, yeah. Knowing that you would have taken twice as long and not done as good a job, right?
Exactly. Yeah. It's like, you know, everybody has their contribution in their space, and I don't feel bad about people who are earning, you know, their money. And I hope that people don't feel bad about, you know, when I deliver, you know, a service, that it was a good value and they got the benefit that they were looking for out of it.
Perfect. So one of the things we like to finish up our shows with is just passing on what we call a pearl of wisdom, which is to our listeners and to people that are out there. With your experience in business and in transitioning into this, which is kind of your own consulting and your own business practice, what would you say to the listeners that would be a pearl of wisdom that might help them with their future endeavors?
I think some of the things that I've always heard and I've always said is, you know, do something you like doing. If you're doing something that you like doing, it doesn't really feel so much like work. And, you know, other things, and I'm only repeating things I've heard other people say, but, it, you know, resonates with me, you know, be passionate about what it is that you do. I think what happens is that if those two things happen, people see it in you. It's like, wow, that guy's really excited. You know, he's excited, he's motivated. And he really seems to enjoy what he's doing and, you know, helping us improve performance.
Right. Well, perfect. Well, John, we appreciate you being on the show today. If somebody wants to get in contact with you or reach out to you, what's the best way to do that?
Probably the best way is, you know, email. We're not in the office an awful lot, but the email is john@corbettassociates.com. And, of course, the website, again, corbettassociates.com. And if they're interested in finding out what it is we might be able to do, there's a one of the navigation buttons is services, and it highlights it at a high level some of the things that we can do. We've done a whole lot of other things that aren't listed there, but that'll give you an idea.
Okay. Well, again, we appreciate you having on the show, and have a great day. For the rest of our listeners, until next week, be safe.
John Baker is a certified financial planner with a Master's of Science in Personal Financial Planning. Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards, Inc. owns the certification mark CFP, Certified Financial Planner, TM and CFP, and in the U.S., which it awards to individuals who successfully complete the CFP Board's initial and ongoing certification requirements. John Baker offers financial planning and securities through Woodbury Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor and broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC, located at 1050 Crown Point Parkway, Suite 1675, Atlanta, Georgia 30338. This program is for information purposes only and should not be considered a solicitation of or offer to buy or offer to sell securities or investment advisory services. Information in this program regarding market or other financial information is obtained from sources which are believed to be reliable. We do not warrant or guarantee the timeliness or accuracy of this information. When considering any registered security products, seek a prospectus carefully before you invest. Make sure you consult your financial professional regarding any specific situation. We'll be right back.